what follows next is truly lightning's touch. What happens when we escape from this little nature and enter into these luminous states? His soul breaks out to join the oversoul. His life is oceaned by that super life. He has drunk from the breasts of the mother of the worlds. A topless supernature fills his frame. She adopts his spirit's everlasting ground as the security of a changing world and shapes the figure of her unborn mites. Immortally she conceives herself in him, in the creature the unveiled creatrix works. Her face is seen through his face, her eyes through his eyes. Her being is his through a vast identity. Then is revealed in man the over divine. This is the goal of this journey. This entire human journey is destined to reach. This is the promise. What has been achieved in Ashwapati would be one day achieved in man. The revelation of the over divine. How beautiful it would be. Right now what shines through our eyes is nothing but our ego and greed. And how beautiful if these eyes could reflect nothing else but her presence. If our hearts could feel nothing else but her love and thrill to her Ananda. Our thoughts could receive nothing else but that light supreme, that truth which is unity and freedom. A static oneness and dynamic power descend in him, the integral Godhead seals. His soul and body take that splendid stamp. This is the twin reality forever same, which Shivabindu would talk about it later in Savitri, in very, very beautiful passages in The Secret Knowledge. Static oneness and a dynamic power. So this oneness is not just a static reality. It's also dynamic. It changes everything. How does it change? It leads everything towards unity. Whatever it touches, that's the power of this oneness. Whatever it touches, it builds harmony, it builds unity. It takes everything towards that oneness, towards that love. That is its power. That is its creatrix power. But then he contrasts it with our own life. So this is of course knowledge, true knowledge. Knowledge, as we have seen, freedom from ignorance, has nothing to do, not even little to do, nothing to do with intellectual knowledge. This is a fundamental thing. One may know everything in the mind, yet unless our being has ascended beyond the frame of the mortal mind and had some taste of what lies in the higher spheres, till then we are ignorant creatures. Perhaps knowing too much, we know nothing. But having ascended from the embodied mind into the planes of the higher worlds, we begin to become free from this ignorance. Of course, if the mind is strong and powerful, if the earthly mind, we can express it better in terms of thought and word. It becomes a beautiful instrument and a channel. But a channel and an instrument is a channel and an instrument. It cannot become the Lord and the Master. This is the consummation of the human mind. But meanwhile, a long, dim preparation is man's life. A circle of toil and hope and war and peace. It's an endless circle, and yet through all this something happens, a long and dim preparation. A whole life is wasted, apparently, to learn one single lesson. But again, when we come back, we have to relearn it under different experiences, different conditions. And we love that. That's the irony. Dragged out by life on matter's obscure ground, in his climb to a peak no feet have ever trod. Few lines below. Until at last is reached the giant point through which his glory shines for whom we were made. What a tremendous line this is. For whom we were made. We were not made to live for petty things. Much later in Savitri, Sri Aurobindo would tell us in the call to the quest, O fate-driven, force-compelled, earth-born race, O petty adventurers in an infinite world and prisoners of a dwarf humanity, but not for a changeless littleness where you meant, not for vain repetition where you built. This transient earthly being, if he so wills, can fit his act to the transcendent scheme. A seer, a strong creator is within. This is what we can become, and not this endless circle of hope and want and failure and fail. Through which his glory shines for whom we were made, and we break into the infinity of God. Across our nature's borderline we escape into supernature's arc of living light. What we experience now is borrowed light, fragmented light, dead light. Somebody else's words we repeat. It's not our living truth, not our experience, but living light, that which we can experience and live. This now was witnessed in that Son of Force. How beautiful if we could say this about ourselves. Who is our parent? Static oneness and a dynamic power, Son of Force. In him that high transition laid its base. This is the transition from man to superman, from human to superhuman, which takes place in Ashupati. And now comes that passage where this being of Ashupati, which has already gathered in itself all the workings of the great masters, unites with the avatar. He changes into the mold of the avatar. The cosmic worker set his secret hand to turn this frail mud engine to heaven use. A presence wrought behind the ambiguous screen. It beat his soil to bear a titan's weight. This is a little joke about somebody who was once carrying some load on his head or his hands, I forget exactly. Somebody in the dining room and carrying that. And, you know, there are all kinds of human beings. So someone jokingly remarked, Oh, look, you are going like a coolie. So this person made a very beautiful remark. He said, Hercule, Hercule. Now it's a double sense. Hercule. How beautiful to become Hercule, to carry mother's bag and baggage. And Hercule, when you are Hercule, you are Hercule. Hercules, we know, was the one who did impossible tasks. He was the one given 7 difficult tasks, seemingly impossible, and he does it. So here, how beautiful if we could say that this frail mud engine, O Lord, you use it, not our ego. This is the image of the Gita. Take this chariot wherever thou wilt. Use me as thy instrument. This beautiful poem, Surrender, where Sri Aurobindo says, O thou, of whom I am thy instrument, I have dug my mind to be thy channel mind. If we could say that, That has already happened in Ashupati, but this canto actually is an invitation. Shobindu is telling us, like a promo. You know, there are promos of films where they show clips. So this is the promo. This is what I have planned for you. This is what I have done for you. You have to now ascend, and you can ascend into this state. He is telling us, is it desirable or not? Look at this. To turn this frail mud engine to heaven use, a presence wrought behind the ambiguous screen. It beat his soil to bear a titan's weight. Every time we get a blow, we should remember the divine is preparing us to bear the titan's weight. What is the use of being so frail and fragile that we break down with a little hurt and pain? This is the strength. Refining half-hewn blocks of natural strength, it built his soul into a statued god. Every time we get a blow, a hurt, a little pain or a big pain, we can look at it like that, this. O master hand, thou art working with thy chisel and shaping me into a statued god, and lend ourselves, with all the joy and surrender and plasticity, and life would become delightful. But we like to cry, you know, we don't like the chipping. We want to remain what we are. That's the problem with we human beings. But Sri Aurobindo is telling us, revealing to us, inviting us. A few lines below. A seer was born, a shining guest of time. For him, mind's limiting firmament ceased above. So when this skull cracks, when this hard lid of intellect breaks, it literally breaks. In fact, there is a sound of breaking. There is a story about how the mother touched Amrita when he was reading Brahman and Maya, and mother was passing by, and mother said, what are you reading? Life divine. Oh, life divine. Mother, we are reading this chapter, Brahman, Ishwara, Maya. Oh, you are reading this. Then he said, mother, but we understand nothing. Mother said, oh, you understand nothing. She just tapped them on the head and went back up the stairs. And as she went up the stairs, these people were projected up their stairs and entered into the Brahmic consciousness. After half an hour, when mother came down, she saw they are still in a state of trance. Calls them down and says, my child, I can give you Brahman realization like this. But we have come here to do something else, something still greater. So, but here there is an ascension. The descent will come later. Just the ascension. In one of his letters, Sri Aurobindo writes, a lid above the head and a veil behind the heart. These things screen us from the divine. How this opens? Either the fire of aspiration burns away the veil and the lid, or a hammer, God's hammer from above. That line will also come somewhere. Grace, sometimes grace is felt like a hammer's blow. It breaks the lid and we are flooded with that supernature. A seer was born, a shining guest of time. He is a guest of time as of now. Seer lives in the timeless, but he enters into time as a guest, shining guest. For him, mind's limiting firmament ceased above. In the griffin forefront of the night and day, yes, there it is, a gap was rent in the all-concealing vault. So there was a gap, and through this gap he could ascend to higher and higher planes. The conscious ends of being went rolling back. The landmarks of the little person fell. The island ego joined its continent. In the Upanishadic sense, this is immortality. Mortality is limitation, immortality is an unlimited being. As long as we are a limited being, we are subject to mortality. Even if we live in a greater cosmic ignorance, even that dissolves. Only an unlimited, boundless being is immortal. So in the practical sense, it means to ascend beyond the triple levels of mind, life and body, which are circumscribed. Even a cosmic mind is a circumscribed mind. It's a cosmic ignorance. Even a cosmic life is a circumscribed life. That's why the term Sri Aurobindo uses is super life, that from which life originates. But when we break beyond it, then we have these deathless worlds, which much later they will come in Savitri. Right now, the yoga of the soul's release, life's barrier opened into the unknown, abolished where conceptions covenants and striking off subjection's rigorous claws, annul the soul's treaty with nature's nescience. There is a clause, subjection's clause. As long as you are a mind-bound creature, you will be subject. So this clause we have signed, they were abolished. Truth and all the grey inhibitions were torn off. Literally, scientists sometimes can write, they have some flashes of intuition. That's why in the brain, the substance is called grey matter. Of course, it's called because it looks grey, but literally it is grey matter. It lives in the grey zone. The white matter is of course below it, but really we live in the greyness. Everything we know is at once in doubt simultaneously, depending on which angle you see. So all the grey inhibitions were torn off and broken the intellect's hard and lustrous lid. This lid looks very brilliant. And we feel great pride in saying that I am double MA, triple MA. What it means is I have a very strong, thick lid. It's not something very creditable. But we enjoy saying this. You know, it's a hard. In fact, much of our education enforces this lid, makes it even more. Oh, you people read Savitri and all this Life Divine. I don't know. You know, then psychologists will come and give their theories of Jung and Freud and Adler and then compare them with Sri Aurobindo. This is the lustrous lid. It looks very nice and it makes us feel very proud. But in our pride lies our doom. If only we could be humble and allow this lid to be broken and broken the intellect's hard and lustrous lid, we make it more and more strong actually. Truth unpartitioned found immense sky room. If this could break, what would we find? Unpartitioned truth. We would find truth everywhere, in all forms, behind everything. The bounded mind became a boundless light. I miss a line here and there deliberately, and I'm not saying this, just. The bounded mind became a boundless light. The finite self mated with infinity. His march now soared into an eagle's flight, out of apprenticeship to ignorance. So far we are apprentice to ignorance. Who is our master? Ignorance. It pays us little joy and we say, ah, very nice. Then within 15 days that quota is run out. Then we go and say, please give us some loan. And it says, how dare I give you some loan? So for a few days we are suffering. Then after that, after much labor, you know, it gives us little loan but takes extra work. This is apprenticeship to ignorance. But when we live in that vastness, we don't need to go from door to ask for happiness. Truth unpartitioned, and it gives unalloyed delight. Wisdom appraised him to her mastercraft and made him an arch mission of the soul. Freedom and empire called to him from on high, above mind's twilight and life's starlit night. There gleamed the dawn of a spiritual day. This is the beginning of the ascension. And this whole canto we'll see levels and gradations of the higher consciousness. And almost Sri Aurobindo would take us to the intuitive mind and what one sees from there. And then in the next canto, the secret knowledge from there one could see why this earth is made and the entire plan. And in Canto 5 he would make the further effort which no one has made so far. No seer, no master, no guru has gone there. And Sri Aurobindo would make that attempt to climb to the highest levels of the overmind. That is yet to come. So it's like a just a little promo. A greater being saw a greater world. As we ascend into these higher planes, the whole outlook and inlook changes. That's the beauty. You don't have to tell to change. We change because we see differently. We don't have to say don't hate, love your neighbor. Well, when you see none else but thyself in everything, do you have to say this? It will look very strange. Sri Aurobindo says in one of his aphorisms, whom shall I forgive? When I see the hand that struck me was the master's hand, shall I then say, I forgive you, my God? Whom shall I forgive? This automatically the change comes because a greater being sees a greater world. My rival's downfall is my own disgrace. I look at my enemy and see Krishna's face. So this greater being begins to look differently. A fearless will for knowledge dared to erase the lines of safety reason draws that bar. Mind soar, souls dive into the infinite. Normally, this is the beauty, the embodied mind. If you try to talk about these things, I think you guys are losing your balance. Why don't you see a psychiatrist? They may be, I'm a psychiatrist by profession, they may be saying the same thing about me. Doesn't matter. Because reason, this is not a rational thing at all. What is this? What you people talk about infinite, higher consciousness, higher worlds? Which higher worlds? I don't see any higher world. I see this earth, this mud, matter. Man is born out of a little gas, a plasm, a sperm and gene. This is man. What you people talk of soul and higher consciousness? Reason, bars. Don't go after these guys to Pondicherry. It was famous, you know, earlier in Shobindu's time. It was told that when people came to Pondicherry, it was famous that they don't like to go back. So it was a very dangerous zone. People were very afraid of sending people to Pondicherry because they may not go back. It's true even now. Of course, it's also true that Pondicherry has extended itself everywhere. So one can, to that extent, of course. But that time, this was the camp of God pitched in human time. One place and none other. Now, of course, it's growing. So, even his first steps broke our small earth bounds and loitered in a vaster, freer air. In hand sustained by a transfiguring might, he caught up lightly like a giant's bow, left slumbering in a sealed and secret cave the powers that sleep unused in man within. He made of miracle a normal act. The very presence of such people, such being, the mother said, such beings who live in a higher consciousness, they don't have to necessarily do something. Their mere presence brings down the forces of the higher worlds in contact with the earth. And very naturally, just their presence, miracle begins to happen. It's not that they do something. It doesn't have to. It becomes very nature of such a being. So here is the very first steps. Make it so natural. Those powers which appear so difficult, they awaken inside. And these are just the first steps. These are not, this is just the beginning of the whole journey. Efforts that would magnificently natural at this height, efforts that would shatter the strength of mortal hearts. Pursued in a royalty of mighty ease, aims too sublime for nature's daily will. What is nature's daily will? from morning till night, most homes, what food am I going to have for breakfast? What food will be there for lunch? What will be there for dinner? 70-80% it is food. Either what food I will have or what food I will not have. This is sometimes the other kind of thing, you know, which we are obsessed with. So food obsession is one. Then what are our normal aims? My office, my work, this, that. But here, what such a being wakes up with? Aims to sublime. Today, I am going to drill a bore through this vault of the skull. Today maybe is the day when I'll be face to face with the living deity. Today, perhaps I will be able to remember whole day that presence, will be able to love my beloved with all my heart. This is aims to sublime. They become natural then. They don't have to tell anyone. It becomes very natural. They were the gifts of the spirit crowding came to him. They were his life's pattern and his privilege. They naturally come. He doesn't have to pursue. When Dilip Kumar Roy went for initiation, he actually came to Sri Aurobindo and then he asked for initiation and Sri Aurobindo didn't say anything much. So he thought Sri Aurobindo has not initiated him. Now Sri Aurobindo had his own way of initiating. So he went and he was looking. Then somebody told him that there is a master yogi staying somewhere. Why don't you come and meet him? So he went for initiation to this yogi. And this yogi told him that you sit and meditate and then I'll initiate you. So he said, I don't know how to keep my mind quiet. So he said, don't worry, I'll help you to do that. So after a while his mind became quiet. Then suddenly this yogi says, what are you saying? You have come to me for initiation. You are already initiated. So he said, no, but I am not initiated. Who told you? He said, I see behind you him. Then he says, Sri Aurobindo, who has already initiated you? He's sitting, speaking of Sri Aurobindo, he's sitting on the entire pile of all the knowledge and power that anyone can have. And such a one has initiated you and you come to me for initiation. He almost remonstrated him. So he says, but he didn't tell me that he has initiated me. So this yogi says, but he has just now come and told me. Look at the beauty of the play. He has not told to him that I have initiated you, but Sri Aurobindo takes the trouble to go to this yogi and tell him, hey, I have already taken care of him. You don't have to meddle with him. This is the kind of natural at that, the power, the gifts of the spirit crowding came to him. They were his life's pattern and his privilege. A pure perception lent its lucent joy. Its intimate vision waited not to think. We love to think, analyze and all this. How beautiful if knowledge can just pour in. We don't have to analyze and think and plan and understand. And Sri Aurobindo says even in Baroda days, he never used to really plan what he is going to teach. And he would go there and he would, you know, speak about whatever he has to speak. So one day somebody told him that, but sir, it does not match our notes what we have read. So Sri Aurobindo gave a very beautiful reply. He said, throw away those notes. How beautiful this would be. The mother would see a film and then she says, but this is not right. This is not how it happened. Speaking of something which has happened, you know, it was a film on some ancient historical event. Say, but this is not how it happened. How beautiful if we could see that. So this is the, look how beautiful the promo is. It enveloped all nature in a single glance. It looked into the very self of things. Deceived no more by form, he saw the soul, which we don't see. It is said, one thief, not thief, he was an agent of Pakistani spy. He came and he would, you know, he came and stayed for some time in the ashram and he would go do pranam and all this. Later on it was found that he's a spy and he was caught. Then somebody asked mother, why didn't you send him away? He says, what to do? Every time he came to me, his soul would step out and surrender itself. divine transaction is at a very different level than we can even understand. We are deceived by the outward play. What is the deception? He is not a spy and now he is a spy. Both are deception. We think first that, oh, I was deceived. I thought he is a good man. I am equally deceived when I think he is a bad man. That is not the truth. Both are truth of the form and appearance. Deceived no more by the form, he saw the soul. Direct communication with the soul. In beings it knew what lurked to them unknown. And there are so many beautiful stories of the mother. There is somebody who got angry with mother and given some flowers, and she came back to mother and said, "Mother, I hate you. I don't love you." So mother is giving them to Vasudha Ben and telling, "Look at this girl. She does not know how much she loves me. She loves me much more than she herself knows." Who can say this? Deceived no more. And we are, oh, this person said like this. It's all our ignorance. The divine is not seeing like that. In beings, it knew what lurked to them unknown. And there are so many countless stories after stories, which I am resisting the temptation. Maybe some other time we'll have. It sees the idea in mind, the wish in the heart. Okay, there is one story of somebody in the line standing, and mother is giving flowers. And this lady, then a girl of maybe 15, 16, she is thinking in her mind, by the time I reach, these roses are going to be over. So she wants a rose. She has herself narrated to me this story. So she wants the rose and she thinks that by the time I'll reach, these roses will be over. Anyway, she goes, and of course, the roses are over because she has calculated. You see how the human mind works. So she reaches and there are no roses. Suddenly mother picks a tray from below, picks a rose, gives it to her and says, "You thought that the roses are going to be over?" The wish in the heart. We don't have to tell her. But when we tell her, there is a double joy. Why should we still tell her? There is a joy. As somebody asked mother, "Mother, ultimately divine does what he wills. Then why should we aspire?" She says, when we aspire, it adds a special intensity to the whole process. When we don't aspire, still the same thing happens. But we feel it as pain. When we aspire, it makes the whole thing delightful. It's a two-way meeting process. Otherwise, divine is holding us and we are trying to run away. When we aspire, we say, "Hold and pull me." This is the difference. So, it sees the idea in mind, the wish in the heart. It plucked out from grey folds of secrecy the motives which from their own sight men hide. He felt the beating life in other men. Now this is one level, and he extends because the island ego drops away. So such a being is less and less circumscribed, and he begins to unite with all life that is around it. So all that happens in them begins to happen in such a person. Sri Aurobindo says at one place, "I saw his anger come to me and enter like this." So all that happens around, and the mother, so much she would say that whatever is happening anywhere in the world, at one point she was experiencing all this inside. In one of his poems, Sri Aurobindo writes about it. Cosmic man, "I am the bird he saves, I am the beast he slays, I am the bird he feeds and saves. The sorrows of a millions takes place within my lonely heart." He felt the beating life in other men invade him with their happiness and their grief. So ego, you see, is a defense barrier. But a defense not only against all that is around us, but a defense against the divine which is above. Their love, their anger, their unspoken hopes entered in torrents, entered in currents, or in pouring waves into the immobile ocean of his calm. The Gita describes this sthiti very beautifully as sthit pragya in one very beautiful line. Towards the end, after describing all the marks of sthit pragya, it says, apurya madam achalam pratishtham. Literally it is that where in a being in whom all the desires of the world enter into an immobile calm. So all these enter into such a being and they are in a state, he is in a into the immobile silence of his calm. Few lines below. Yet stood untouched, king of itself alone. We'll just maybe end with a few more lines of this higher worlds. Okay. Not only everything begins to undergo a change, our consciousness is freed from the traps of this earthly case, and all corresponding to our outer senses, there are inner senses. These senses begin to awake, and corresponding to our earthly mind, there is a deeper subliminal mind. It opens to the cosmic mind. So what happens when the inner senses awake and our mind, limited embodied mind, opens to a subliminal mind as a result of the action of the higher consciousness? On page 28, in the far avenues of the beyond, he heard the secret voice, the word that knows, and saw the secret face that is our own. The inner planes uncovered their crystal doors. Strange powers and influences touched his life. A vision came of higher realms than ours. One of the first actions of the divine Shakti in us is to free our consciousness from this earthly case. It's stuck and bound there. And first in dreams, then in waking consciousness, we begin to ascend to these higher planes and begin to experience something of that reality. A consciousness of brighter fields and skies, of beings less circumscribed than brief-lived men, and subtler bodies than these passing frames. Objects too fine for our material grasp. Chinese silk will look very crude. What a invitation Shobhinda is giving us. Objects too fine for our material grasp. Acts vibrant with a superhuman light and movements pushed by a superconscient force. And joys that never flowed through mortal limbs. We seek joy. Here is joy. Shobhinda is telling us the doors of the higher consciousness, it's worth the effort. All that we call happiness will pale into insignificance before that. We'll experience the joy that never flowed through mortal limbs. And lovelier scenes than earth's and happier lives. A consciousness of beauty and of bliss, a knowledge which became what it perceived, replaced the separated sense and heart. This knowledge, this is the beauty, it's a knowledge which identifies with whatever it's experiencing. Normally, if we see the embodied mind, how it works, when it is speaking about psychic being, if an embodied mind, earthly mind is speaking, you will get an impression he is not speaking about psychic being but of a dead body. You know, he'll make a caricature of it. But this knowledge, as it is revealed, so it becomes. it simultaneously becomes what it perceives. That is the beauty of this knowledge. And drew all nature into its embrace. The mind leaned out to meet the hidden worlds. Air glowed and teemed with marvelous shapes and hues. In the nostrils quivered celestial fragrances. Even our agarbattis will appear, you know, dull. Celestial fragrances, jasmine and champa and God knows what all. On the tongue lingered the honey of paradise. This is what is called as amrit, the nectar of immortality, which in Hatha Yoga people try through great force, through Khichdi Mudra, they do all kinds of tongue twisting to get one drop of that nectar. All their life they twist the tongue and touch it to the palate and they say, I get a drop of the nectar. Here it becomes natural. You don't have to do anything. The touch of higher consciousness brings that lingering taste into the tongue. On the tongue lingered the honey of paradise. A channel of universal harmony. Hearing was a stream of magic audience. A bed for occult sounds earth cannot hear. Our ears cannot hear those subtle sounds. The mother used to not only hear but bring down. The greatest musicians do that. They catch something of that. The mother's music is a living expression of those sounds she brings from the higher spheres, those cadences, those harmonies. Her voice, her organ music brings those higher harmonies into the mortal sphere. So we will stop with this little touch of the higher consciousness. This is still in the realm of the higher and illumined mind, but here Sri Aurobindo does not cabin it like that. It's not the way we would describe. If we were to describe higher mind, intuitive mind, illumined mind, we will describe it as the mind does it in classroom, class 2, class 3, class 4. Sri Aurobindo doesn't describe it like that. He describes it like one wave merging into another, changing into another, and the waves, you know, interpenetrating each other, because that is the impression in these planes.